What do more college graduates mean for the country's economy?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill. The U.S. has reached a major education milestone. For the first time ever, more than 30% of U.S. adults have a college degree. In 1998, less than a quarter of the population had graduated. For more, we've called up Anthony Carnevale. He heads up the Center on Education and the Workforce at Georgetown University. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why is the number of people with college degrees going up?
The demand for college has been rising since the 1980s. In fact, college has become pretty much the express ticket to the middle class and one of the only guarantees. More than 60% of the jobs in the American economy now require some level of education after high school, and a good 40% of them require a bachelor's degree or better.
Now, what's it mean for the economy that more people are getting these bachelor's degrees?
It's very good news for the economy. That is, people with higher levels of education are more productive. That's very clear, especially when they work in collaboration with flexible technology. In these times, that means our old friend the computer hooked up to all sorts of other technologies.
Do we have enough high-skilled jobs in this country for all these new grads?
Yes, we do. The demand for college graduates has been rising at about 3% a year since 1982, but our production of these graduates has only been rising by about 1%.
So is one bachelor's degree as good as the next?
In the final analysis, what you make and whether you can get a job depends on what you take. If you get a BA in petroleum engineering, you'll be the most highly paid and most sought after degree holder in the current economy. If you get a degree in counseling, social work, you'll make roughly a third of that, and your unemployment rate is going to be substantially higher. Will be 6 or 7% for some time to come.
Georgetown's Anthony Carnevale, thanks.
Thank you.
Now to a state that lags in college grads, Michigan. We spent a lot of the week there taking a look at the real economy. We want to know how the economy is shaping the way people plan to vote in Tuesday's election. My colleague Jeremy Hobson is with us now for more. He joins us from Michigan Radio in Ann Arbor. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the primary is next Tuesday. What did you learn about how the economy is affecting the election?
Well, it's a very mixed picture here. We just spent time in two very different parts of the Detroit area, one very wealthy, one not wealthy at all, and people's views of the economy are different. But one of the people that we talked to in Grosse Pointe, which is a fancy suburb, a guy named Fred Satterland, he deals in auto parts supplies, and so he was helped by the auto bailout a few years ago, and here's what he had to say about that.
Bailing out the car companies was a good thing. You can always argue about who got the short end of that deal and who got better off.
But the interesting thing, Adrian, is he's not going to vote for President Obama. He plans to vote next Tuesday for Rick Santorum.
So, Jeremy, it's not just bailout politics there. How else is the economy affecting Michigan voters?
Well, we've been talking about a comeback that some are seeing in the auto industry. GM just reported some big profits. People are looking. They're saying the auto companies, they're back on their feet again. But the fact is that even as the unemployment rate here has dropped from a 14% peak down to about 9%, some look at that and say that's not because all those people got jobs. It's because many of them have left the state. They've gone to other places, perhaps Texas, where they can get jobs. And the other thing is, Adrienne, I talked to you the other day about the fact that there's a surplus right now in the state of Michigan and that the governor is, even though he had made big cuts in education, is going to put some of that money back. Well, after that was on the radio, we got a call from a local school official here in Michigan who said, well, that's true. He's putting some money back, but it's not nearly as much as he took away. So still many people starting from a much lower point than they were just 5 years ago in Michigan.
Fascinating. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson. Thanks.
Thank you.
Now, let's do the numbers. Global markets are up this morning. Department store JCPenney says it had a less than jolly holiday season. The store lost $87 million. And we have the word that the post office is planning to cut an additional 35,000 jobs. It needs to trim its budget after more of us are emailing instead of actual mailing.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing solutions to help grow and protect retirement income through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Constant Contact, celebrating the launch of Social Campaigns, a brand new social media marketing tool. Learn more at ConstantContact.com.
The Dutch airline KLM has launched a new seating program. And no, this isn't another story about paying more for your aisle seat. KLM is going to let flyers choose who to sit next to based on their online profiles. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports.
There are two types of airline passengers, says George Hobica of AirfareWatchdog.com.
Those who put their headphones on and bury themselves in the book, and those who are more social and who realize that actually the person sitting next to you could be your next business partner.
Or a dinner date. KLM's Meet and Seat program lets passengers post details from Facebook or LinkedIn. They can ping others who've shared data and ask to meet up before the flight, sit together, or share a taxi home. KLM's launched the service on just two routes. About 200 passengers have taken part. Simon Haslam is with the Social Research Association.
It doesn't necessarily need to work in the long term for them to benefit in the short term for relatively low cost.
He expects more airlines to follow KLM's lead, though he says it's too early to tell who's more likely to use this type of service. Colleagues headed to a business conference or singles looking for love. Sites for the latter already exist. If you didn't get a chance to talk to that hottie two rows back, there's WeMetOnAPlane.com to track them down later. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
And finally, looking for a few extra dollars, or maybe a few extra hundreds of thousands of dollars? There's always the pawn shop. According to Reuters, pawn shops that cater to the wealthy have started taking wine as collateral. And no, we're not talking Yellowtail Merlot or Two Buck Chuck. I can guess how much I get for that. Instead, pawn shops are paying out for cases of things like Chateau de Kim and Chateau Margaux. I'm Adrienne Hill in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
On the list of Oscar-nominated films this year is an animated short made not in Hollywood, but down in the bayou.
You can't throw a rock in California without hitting an animator, you know, or somebody else kind of in that field. And I don't think we're there yet.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Can Louisiana make it in the animation business? That story next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.